Now, for police investigating gun violence, an eyewitness can be the difference between a conviction and a crime going unsolved. But fear of retaliation can keep people from sharing what they know.
In 2015, Antonio Smith spent months trying to silence the people who saw him murder Eddie Poe in Milwaukee's Garden Homes neighborhood. The case is the subject of a six-part series in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel called The Intimidator. It wraps up today, and you can find it linked on the Central Time Facebook page.
Ashley Lutheran reports on crime and breaking news for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She's a co-author of the series. Ashley, thanks for joining us.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me, Rob.
Well, it turns out witness intimidation, a big issue, a big story in Milwaukee, and it sounds like police and prosecutors are just starting to devote more resources to it. Do we know how common, first of all, witness intimidation is?
So witness intimidation is hard to measure. The metric my colleague John and I used was looking at the number of specific witness intimidation charges that have been filed. We looked at snapshots in time from 2005 to 2015, which mirrors a couple of the time elements in our series as we're focusing on one very egregious and serious case of witness intimidation. Prosecutors here in Milwaukee County have devoted many resources to witness intimidation. The struggle is just the volume and scope is overwhelming at times.
And in this case, you write about the case of Antonio Smith. Intimidation isn't a strong enough word. I mean, witnesses are murdered in the course of this ongoing case. But can you sum up the story of Antonio Smith and his actions after a 2015 murder?
Sure. So as you mentioned, there was a murder in 2015. Antonio Smith is suspected of that and ultimately is charged with that homicide. 8 days after that killing in July in Milwaukee's Garden Home neighborhoods, a 17-year-old witness to that first homicide is gunned down. It's an ambush situation. I should point out, in retrospect, it seems very clear that these two things were connected, but at the time, investigators weren't exactly sure if they were directly related. They later determined, yes, they were. And then, after Antonio Smith is behind bars, he works with other individuals, other accomplices that he has who are still out on the streets, to try to kill another witness to that first homicide in Garden Homes.
And in addition to actual homicide, it sounds like in this case and others, there are threats made, texts, verbal threats maybe, saying if you talk, you or in some cases your family are in danger.
Yes, and we've seen this in many high-profile cases here in Milwaukee. And most of the time, witness intimidation is a lot more subtle than what took place in this. As you said, it's not just intimidation, it's murder. And what we see is that frequently in cases that involve gangs or drug-related violence, and also domestic violence. Those are cases that often involve witness intimidation because a lot of that requires people to come to court and testify about what someone did.
And the slang phrase, the catchphrase people use, you write, is no face, no case. So without key witnesses, somebody can literally get away with murder.
It can be very difficult for prosecutors and police to make sure that individuals are held accountable in a court of law if they don't have witnesses to come forward. The criminal justice system is set up so that people accused of crimes can confront those who are accusing them and can confront and address the evidence brought against them. And that is a fundamental part of our system of law here. It does create challenges and it does create it can create opportunity for individuals to try to manipulate the system. And so what prosecutors are trying to do is be more aggressive in how they're prosecuting it. They're targeting high-risk cases that they've identified because of those other factors that I mentioned earlier, and they're trying to intervene. So sometimes if a person ultimately is acquitted of the original offense, let's say a domestic violence battery, they might then still be convicted of intimidating the witness in that same case.
And this intimidation goes on sometimes even right there in the courtroom, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when we were covering this particular case involving Antonio Smith, there were many deputies and DA office investigators there monitoring the crowd and monitoring the people who were taking the stand and the defendant, Antonio Smith, watching for any kind of motion or gesture or look. You know, it's as simple as, the classic mean mugging. But that all is an intimidating thing because, to be very honest, it's hard for someone's safety to be guaranteed. You'll see in our piece, someone's safety was guaranteed by basically being moved to another county and put behind bars himself.
We're talking to Ashley Lutheran from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, co-author of a series on witness intimidation. We've got a link to that series on the Central Time Facebook page. Ashley, one of the most shocking episodes of many in the story you tell about Antonio Smith, as you mentioned, behind bars, he is conspiring to silence witnesses, and a conspiracy basically between him behind bars, his girlfriend and others to try to kill one of the witnesses. Police find out about this. Can you talk about that story?
Absolutely. So jail staffers are monitoring the calls of Antonio Smith. He tries some tactics to make to throw them off his scent, or he hopes that he has. But they're listening in. They're watching and recording all of these things. And he makes a plot and essentially hires a hitman to try to kill another witness. And he does that from behind bars with the video and telephone calls. And his girlfriend, pregnant girlfriend, who's still out running his drug dealing operation, is the key conduit between that. And so she's meeting up with this hitman that Antonio Smith has hired, and then they go to try to bail out this witness out of jail who is locked up for a different offense. And their plan was to bail him out and kill him. And investigators heard this plot. They were able to disrupt it. It was very urgent, very time-sensitive. They picked up the witness from the House of Correction here, which is a low-security facility out in a Milwaukee suburb. And they explained, hey, this is a very real threat against your life. This is what we're going to do. And it was to the point where Antonio Smith's girlfriend and the man he had hired were actually going around the courthouse complex here in Milwaukee looking for this witness, because they knew he would have to go there when he was released on bail that they had posted.
And then they lose track of this witness, and then there's a plot, I believe fortunately never carried out, to potentially firebomb a house where they think the witness is staying,
yes,
and then shoot people as they run out of the building.
Yes. They originally think, you know, while this is all going on, Antonio Smith is still making calls from the county jail to his girlfriend. He's telling her, you know where you need to be, when she says she can't find this witness in the courthouse complex. They go to the house where they think this witness might be. Maybe he was already released. Maybe he's already there. They think we're going to do an armed home invasion, but then they decide that's too risky. So they decide, yes, we're going to try to firebomb this house, and as people flee, we're going to shoot at them. Now, that was interrupted because they circled that area so frequently and in such a short amount of time that other people in that neighborhood got suspicious and called the police. The police realized what was going on, and there was a short pursuit. They lost the suspects, but then the next day they arrested all three people involved in the plot and searched several residences, including a storage facility as well.
And I want to put this into a little wider context. This is happening, a lot of it, in a circle of people who know each other either directly or by reputation. They may have lived or grown up in the same area. They know who everybody else knows in many cases. It would be hard to come forward and testify against someone in those circumstances when everybody knows who everybody else is.
Absolutely. As we know, violence, particularly gun violence, is highly concentrated, and it's concentrated among tight networks of people. And that is the case here with Antonio Smith. And one of the great tragedies and ironies of this is that the 17-year-old witness, Brianna Eskridge, who was shot and killed, she was interviewed by police, but she did not provide information identifying Antonio Smith as the shooter. But to Antonio Smith, the fact that she had talked and he knew that she had talked, and, you know, whether he believed that she had provided that information, he at least knew that she had been interviewed. And to him, that was enough to make her a problem for him.
This story was all going on, all starting the initial murder and the events that followed in that year 2015, when we were seeing this big jump in homicides in Milwaukee, mostly gun violence. How big a part of that story, this increase in gun violence and efforts to stop it, is this witness intimidation? How big an obstacle is this to getting a handle on that increase in homicides?
I think witness intimidation is sort of an under-accounted for variable in a lot of cases, because you have folks who maybe don't, who want to handle gun violence or victimization by retaliating, by getting their own justice. Maybe they feel that they don't trust the criminal justice system to get them justice or the justice that they're seeking. And they're weighing all of these very real safety concerns as well. So I think it's definitely a factor, and I think it's been an underexplored factor because it's very difficult to quantify. How many times do people not call 911 when they hear gunfire because they know if they do, you know, that might attract suspicion from their neighbors? We can't really measure that sometimes. Sometimes it's hard to measure absence.
Do police and prosecutors feel like they're making headway here with their newer efforts on witness intimidation?
I think so. I think the DA's office, you know, when my colleague John and I reported soon after this case broke in November of 2015, when we were reporting on other efforts around the country, you know, Milwaukee County really is looked at as a model for handling witness intimidation. And by having this very experienced and aggressive unit within the district attorney's office, again, the question is one of volume. You have more than 20,000 phone calls made from the jail every single week, identifying who is the most dangerous and which calls need to be monitored the most. Parsing through, understanding, listening to hours of tape, that all takes a lot of time and a lot of resources.
We'll leave it there for now. Ashley, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That was Ashley Luther, and one of the authors of The Intimidator, a 6-part series about witness intimidation in Milwaukee. You can find that series linked on the Central Time Facebook page.
Coming up after the news, it's Food Friday. We'll look at what makes a top-notch sandwich and how you can upgrade your favorite sandwich recipes. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.